Now let's see, today's February 14th through 16th, 1984, and I'm in Frostproof at the Lap Maxi Corporation in an office here talking to Douglas Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is the second tape I've made of Mr. Thompson. And let's see, Douglas, why don't you tell me a little bit about you, like when and where you were born, your mother and daddy, and some stuff about your growing up.
Well, I was born at Mick Old Bluff on Cassini River, September 17th, 1903.
Yeah. What was your mother and daddy's names?
Well, my daddy was named Alexander, and my mother was named Hortense.
Okay.
That was given names.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mother was a Wright when my daddy married her.
I got you.
Yeah.
Now, you said, how did you get into doing in the cow business?
Well, my daddy was working in it when I was born. He came out of work for Mount Hiram Moody in 1895 over there. And I was born into it.
Now, how did you get down with the Likes brothers down south?
Well, in 1919, people bought up that range, and we had to move our cow out of there. And we moved them down to Lee County then.
Yeah.
That was open range. And in 1924, Likes brothers took over the Lee County Cattle Company. They went in debt and took them over. We had cattle there, so we worked together. First, we agreed to send somebody, one man with them, and they'd take care of our cattle. And that's how I first got started with them.
And how long did you get stay down there then? That would have been for a while.
About 12 years. Yeah.
Now, you were telling me, how did you get up with Lat Maxi?
Well, I found out that he wanted to hire a man, he needed a man. And so I came over here one Saturday morning and talked to him. He said he had an old coal guardian out there on probation. So the first time he does anything, I'll let you know. Next Thursday, I was saying to Okeechobee, he sent me a telegram to meet him out at the ranch gate, and I did, and went in there.
Now, did you start working out there? What year was that then?
1938, third day of April.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was you married then?
Huh?
Was you married
yeah,
then?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So when you first started working out there, did the family live out on the ranch?
Yeah, I moved there when I first started working there, right after I started moving there.
And when was it that the family moved into town and you used to drive back and forth every day?
Well, when the children got big enough to go to school, moved to Okeechobee.
Hmm.
But that was, you had a place down on Okeechobee Lake too.
Maxie did.
Yeah. But that was inconvenient, so in 1948, I guess, we moved back here to Frostproof.
Okay. Well, tell me something about Lat Maxi and how he got in the cattle business.
Well, I don't know. That land over there, a lot of it was going on the Murphy Act, selling for taxes, you know, to get back on the tax system. And he bought a lot of that land cheap and got into it. And he liked to hunt. He wanted some area to hunt in.
Now, when did he get into the cattle business out there?
1930, late 34, early 35.
So he's a pretty newcomer then to the...
Yeah, he's a newcomer to it, yes.
Now, when you started work for him, how many acres did you have to work?
Well, at that time, he had about 65,000 acres. Yeah.
And then he added on after that?
Yeah, he bought 47,000 acres south in Okeechobee County. Then he bought over in the Indian River in Okeechobee County, over another block area. Then he bought the Chancy Bay place in 1940. And
now, where's the Chancy Bay? Is that...
That's 16 miles below Okeechobee, going around on the east side of the lake.
So not all these blocks were connected then. They were all separate.
They're separate, yeah.
Now, how many acres is there out there now that they work?
Well, that Indian River stuff and Okeechobee, that part down there, they sold most of that. They don't own it anymore.
Okay. How about the Maxi Ranch? How many acres you reckon they are out there now?
Well, right in the main ranch, I'm at close to 100,000 acres.
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess you
see, probably more than that, a little more than that.
Well, last time we were down here, I think, was it you or Coot or somebody was telling us they'd not too long ago bought all the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't think about that. Yeah, they bought that up next to the river, too.
I wonder how many acres that was.
Well, I don't know, but I imagine about 8 or 9,000 acres, I figure. 8 or 9,000, but long enough.
That means they own all the way from the Kissimmee River all the way to Yeehaw Junction down
there. That's right, and back down south.
To the county line, they own below it, they own it.
Oh, 7 miles deep in Okeechobee County.
Oh.
From that river bridge to Okeechobee Lake, they own almost half of the riverfront. And all this controversy about redoing that river would ruin them in the cattle business. I wouldn't give that marsh land they got there for all the rest of the ranch property.
You wouldn't?
No, it's to raise cattle on.
Think it's good?
It's good land, yes, sir, good land.
Why is that marsh land better than the other part?
Well, I'll tell you, that prairie country there, you couldn't pick up no place in Florida and set it down and be any poorer land than that is.
I guess it's just dry or just won't grow grass?
Yeah, it's not just poor land. Yeah, it's got plenty of moisture and everything. It's just sand.
Now, when you was first starting there, you know, on the Maxie Ranch or even down south, did you have to fight the palmettos like people do today?
We didn't. When I first started there, we didn't bother them at all. Just let it go like it was. Didn't.
So y'all weren't in the grass growing business?
No, he got into it after he started the pasture improvement after I went there.
Yeah. So. What do you got to do to improve pasture down out
there? Well, you got to get all that top stuff off of it, mostly palmetto out there on that prairie country, and just get up and get in shape. And
put grass on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see, how else I don't get you there too. What's the most people ever worked out there when you was working, like full time?
Well, just in roundups, we generally tried to have 9 or 10, and then roundup time get over, get down less, and never did have no set amount.
Yeah. Did you hire people like by the day or something?
Yeah, hired them by the day mostly, yeah.
What'd you call those workers?
They were just cowboys at all.
Yeah.
And for years we had a bunkhouse and fed them. We didn't have no place for married people to live, so we just mostly single men.
When you started, there's only that bunkhouse.
That's right. The bunkhouse weren't there then. They weren't there for years after I went there. Them men slept up in the barn.
Good God.
Yeah.
Well, when was that bunkhouse built?
I don't remember what year it was built, but it was way years later.
Hmm. Now what about those two houses, the one that you lived in for a while,
yeah,
and then there's that other one just like it kinda. Were they there when you first started?
No. No. There's nothing there now was there when I went there except that barn.
Yeah.
Mr. Max's big house and the little old house I went into, both of them burned later. That barn is the only building there now was there when I went there.
Yeah. That seems to be in good shape.
Yeah.
What did you do to try to improve the herds? What did Mr. Maxie allow you to do, or what did you want to do?
Mr. Maxie just done what he wanted to do, and I done what he wanted done. He's very distinctly done that himself.
Hmm. Was he interested in improving the herd?
Yeah, he.
How did you go about, what did y'all do to try to?
Well, you had to build up there's no use to have a good animal if you got something to eat. You got to get the grass before you get the animals to have any success.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, when you was working out there, what kind of stock did y'all have?
Well, they were scrub Florida native cattle with a little brown in them. Some of them just straight out scrub.
Did you have any English stock bred in them?
Very little then.
There's more now?
Yeah, they got them bred up now. They got a lot of Charlotte in them now, Hereford and one thing and another.
Yeah. Now, when you was working out there, what was the maximum amount of stock that y'all had?
Well, we never did.
More or less.
Well, in 1960, 1961, had 21,000 head of cattle. We inventoried them.
Yeah.
And but they varied up and down. And
yeah. Would that be about an average, you think?
No, that was above the average.
It was a little high.
Yes. Yeah, that was above the average. That's about the most they ever had.
Yeah. Was any of the men working out there now, there when you was there?
No.
Junior Lee wasn't out there then?
No. Huh. Yes, he had that Pete Morgan. He worked some when he may not have been out there when I left, but he was there on his own before I left.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where did y'all get your gear? Where'd you get your horse gear?
Well, Simeon and Okeechobee mostly. Yeah, each one of them had a leather shop. Saddle and stuff. And,
yeah. Was Johnny Rabin, did he have a shop down there then in Okeechobee?
No.
He's after you.
Yeah.
Are there any of the old-time, any folks that you know of make gear?
Not that I know of now, no.
Hmm.
We bought most of our stuff in Kissimmee.
Yeah.
Is that place there in Kissimmee?
I've never been to it, but I've heard of it.
Uh-huh.
What? Tell me about some of the gear. When you went out, like roundup time, well, what time of year was the roundup times?
Well, generally, we started marking brown in about 1st of May, okay. And then we wean the yearlings in November, generally, starting November.
Yeah.
Weaning time.
So, did y'all try to separate herds and all that kind of stuff so you'd know exactly when the calving time was going to be? And
no, we didn't never have no special weather conditions, one thing or another, generally control that.
Yeah. So y'all didn't try to keep the bulls apart from the rest of the herd?
Yeah, we pick up the bull in the winter and feed them.
And keep them separate from
Winter and feed them, yeah.
So when did you turn the bulls back up?
As soon as grass began to come in the spring, the wheat and grass started growing.
That's about now then, pretty close.
Yeah. If you didn't, when you put them out, they'd come right back on the fence trying to come back where you fed them if they didn't have something to eat.
Getting hungry.
Hungry, yeah.
I'll be hungry.
Yeah.
Now, how many bulls would you have for a,
Well, we got to keep 6,700 bulls.
6,700?
Yeah.
God. And how long would you keep them?
Well, just according to, it's like people. Some of them play out quicker than others. They just, if one was good and held up good, keep him.
Yeah.
Got pretty aged. If you didn't, get rid of it.
All right. And how long would you allow a cow to breed? How many times would you breed a cow?
Just because she wore out. Some of them wore out quicker than others, but 12 or 14 years old was old enough.
All right. Now, how many cows would you keep in my, on hand, like?
Whenever you have no special number. Just whatever we had, we kept culling them, get rid of the sorry ones, and kept the best ones all with you.
Yeah. But I guess you had more cows than you did bulls, didn't you?
Yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah.
Huh. But anyway, getting back to that horse gear, when y'all would go out to work cattle on horse, what did you always carry with you?
Well, just the gear you had on your horse, your bridle and saddle and saddle blankets, raincoat, and ropes to tie your horse with.
There's a question there. Y'all didn't, did you ever, like you see television now, they're always roping steers and roping cows. Did y'all do much roping?
No, that was for the birds. That's all unnecessary.
Why?
Well, it's just here. It's just doing your animals harm and
What did y'all do where you didn't have to rope?
Hmm?
What did y'all do to not have to rope?
Well, we'd get them and pin them to handle them, pin them in the pens, and we didn't.
All right. How many pens was there on that Maxie Ranch when you were working?
Well, they had the ones at Coonhout, 7 Mile, and set down at Fort Drum. It was one chance to be. That was something we were always very short of, pens.
Yeah.
It's too far, drive the cattle too far. But it costs to keep them pens up and everything too.
Did you use a whip?
Well, I you'd want to put the bulls out and separating them. You cut out certain ones to go in certain pastures and a little short whip and have them with that. But as far as you and cow whips, we never did use them.
Huh. You think they're getting more popular now, or are they just...
Well, it's like the picture of Sean Marlboro Mount on television, them cow whips are.
You are right, Douglas.
Yes. They're detriment. They're something you don't need.
So when y'all moved the cows around, how did you separate them out then?
Well, we separated them in the pens or else on the horse, but you don't have to have a whip to separate them and put up a jam of the fence and cut them out on the horses. You don't have to have a whip.
How do you cut them out with the horses?
Just go in there and ride one out and get it away from the bunch and run them off out and have to be somebody down to hold them up in the other corner.
All right. Yeah. And y'all didn't use dogs either, did you?
Very little. Very little.
What's the advantage of dogs and what are some of the disadvantages too?
Well, the disadvantage is that they cause you more trouble than they are good. A cow and a young calf will all be chased and run back after the dogs. If you've got bad pasture, bad swamps and things like that, dogs are right. But that kind of range out there, you don't need no dogs at all.
You were telling me one time you could just run them to death out in that big wide open
country. Well, the dogs will, yeah. Them big long roundups, the dogs will give out.
Yeah.
And we didn't need them out there. Yeah. But I had some dogs along and a couple of places we needed them, but we'd get them pick up trucks and go out daylight. Them cattle would be out of the swamp and put the dogs on. And I'd stay with that pickup, and them boys would go over the other pickup and get the horses and come over there. And then we'd tie the dogs and go back and get them out of the way. So the cow wouldn't be chasing them all day.
Huh. Good. Well, I guess when you started work there, y'all used to stay out at some of the camps pretty much, didn't you?
Yeah. We camped out.
What'd you eat?
Well, we always had plenty of beef. We killed beef and eat them out there. We always had plenty to eat. Now, I wouldn't say that about Lack's brothers when I worked for them so much because they were pretty tight about the eating.
What'd they let you have? They wouldn't let you have any?
They'd want you to eat this old white Karo syrup and you know, we call them penitentiary beans, them old white beans.
Penitentiary beans.
Like they use in the prisons.
Y'all ate pretty good at it, Maxie.
Yeah. But used to, you're not dipping. We dip down there between the bell and cliffs and likes his cattle and fish mouth on. We'd trade them beans for mullet.
Hmm.
We'd trade them some beans for mullet. Yeah. Have a change of food.
Yeah. When would you have to go out and spend the nights out, camp out like?
Well, when we had them roundups, we'd have to camp out, yeah.
So it's only just a couple times a year then?
That's right, yeah. Some about a week or 10 days each time though.
Yeah. I guess you tell me something about that gooseneck trailer.
That come by after I left there. We never had one while I was there.
Yeah.
Now they can load the horses up and go anywhere with that, you know.
Yeah. So how did you get the horses out to these camps?
We rode them. All right. Rode them.
When you was working, you know, roundup times, how many horses did you have that you would use to work with?
We just carried one with us when we went off to work around, and when that didn't get tired, we'd come in and get another one.
Come back into the main
ranch. Yeah.
Now, what do you call that ranch area where the home is? Has that got a name like?
Well, that was just the headquarters there, right? Coon Hamill was the name of the place.
Coon Hamill.
That's where we went that day out there.
Yeah.
That was the headquarters, yeah.
Coon Hamill.
Yeah. That's been Coon Hawk ever since I can remember.
Yeah.
I don't know where it got that name.
Huh. Let's see. What other questions did I want to ask you? What was the worst job as far as you were concerned? Dealing with cattle.
Well, it was all rough work, but I guess the marketing and branding was the worst job. That was hard work.
Describe how you did that.
Well, before these marches, you used to come out of the coat and threw them down on the ground. And then got one hind leg, the other, and picked up the front end, threw it on the ground, held him down, turned his head back to earmark him, and then they branded him on the ground.
Yeah. Did you have to do that?
Somebody did, yeah.
I mean, you did it when you was working?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Hold his head back. You mean lay him on his side?
Yeah, on his side. And take your left hand, turn that head up so the man get to the bottom ear to mark it.
I got you.
Then he put his foot on his nose and mark the top ear. Somebody brand it. It's art. You learn how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they got chutes out there?
Yeah, they got chutes now. Yeah, you don't.
Huh.
You don't have to catch them by hand anymore.
Did they have them when you was out there before you left?
I was there a year before we ever got them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had them pretty much most of the time you was out there.
Well, about half the time I was there, I guess we had them. I put them in the corner by hand up to then.
Hmm. Did it have the kind where you put them in and it would turn on?
Turn them up. Yeah.
Now, when you cut calves out there, how do you do that?
You mean the bull calves? Or,
yeah.
Well, you cut off that sack and you got thing that these veterinarians use to castrate horses, they call it that lasticator. And you mash them strings and that stops the blood flow. It cords the strings and they don't bleed.
So you just cut it straight across?
Cut it off and then pull the strings down and tip them off with that lasticator. And that stops all the blood. They won't bleed to death then.
Now let's see. I've seen it where you'll split the sack.
Yeah, well, we never did do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you did. You just used a pocket knife?
Yeah. No, we used pocket knife to cut the end of the sack off, and then the elasticator to cut the nuts right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a dog. Mm-hmm. An earmark, I guess, just a pocket knife.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess did you have a gas fire or just wood fire?
I had wood fire. That gas bench has come in since I left. They use gas now, but they didn't when I was there.
Yeah. How hot's it got to be?
Well, you want to keep that brand pretty hot. Not red hot, but just good hot.
Yeah. I guess you can. How many calves can you brand in one heating?
Just one. One put it back in the fire, and then next calf comes along. You generally have three or four brands, so they won't always be hot.
Oh, I see. That makes sense.
But used to in the open range days, you might have 15 or 20 brands in the fire. Different owners, you know, had calves in the bunch.
Now, that's something else. Now, everybody I've ever talked to says that if there's anybody in this country that knows how to mammy calves, it's you.
Yeah.
Tell me about mammy.
Well, I don't know. I was born into it, raised into it.
Well, I guess you got to have a pretty good memory.
I reckon.
How do you know?
Well, I couldn't tell you. I don't know. I just could always do it. Always like it.
I mean, you could look at the cow and then look at a whole bunch of calves and be able to tell which calf went with that calf.
Well, I always done that before we ever pinned them. You stop them out in the woods and go through them and call it learning them. Learning the calf before you ever pin them. You don't wait till you pin them. You got to know it before you ever pin them. Because you might have in that pen overnight or several hours before you go to marking and branding. Used to be you had to separate them the way you do yet, get the cows away from them before you started marking and branding.
So when you first describe a roundup, how does that work then? You're talking about things I'm not familiar with.
Well, you go out and round the cattle up, and then you take them into the pens and you separate them, whatever you want to do. Back in the open range days, you cut out what you wanted to hold up, old cows or steers or anything, or somebody might want their cattle all held up while you're working them and do that.
But now when you weaned them, when you rounded them up to wean them, that's when you had to separate the calves, of course, from the moms.
Yeah.
So when did you have to get them together? Like if you were mammying calves, you had to...
They done that when you mark and brand in the spring early.
That's when you get them all together.
Yeah. Yeah, in the spring when you mark and brand, when you have to learn the calf. Now, at Max's, I didn't have to do that. They all had cattle, but they just give me a list in the spring how many to mark for each one, the ground children and all.
Oh, I see. And it didn't make any difference which one.
But back in the open range days, back when I worked for Lyxon back then,
uh-huh.
You had to learn the cattle. They were men.
Because they belonged to different several owners. Different
yeah,
people.
Yeah,
all
yeah, yeah.
Well, I'd be a valuable man.
Well, it wasn't too valuable then. It was pretty cheap labor.
Oh, Lord.
Listen.
Let's see. Trying to think of another something. How long does a saddle last?
Well, just according to who made it and what it's made out of and how hard you use it and all. If you keep it up in the barn, it'll last always. If you use it hard, why? Yeah.
How long would one last you, like, average? Is there, I'm just...
Oh, I'd say 4, 5, 6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe longer, yeah.
How many days, of, like a month or a year, would you be in the saddle?
Well, out there, I'd say I was in there about half the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, out there at Maxie. And I worked for Lyxbrother, we were in there most all the time.
Yeah.
So we didn't spend much time then building fences and things back then.
Yeah. What about dipping troughs and things like that?
What?
Dipping troughs? What do you call those? Are they, was that what you call them? Or you dip cattle?
Oh, dipping vats.
Dipping vats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are they, is there a dipping vat at every one of the pens out at Maxie Place you're at?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
When did that?
No, there's no dipping vat at Fort Drum down there.
Okay.
There's small dipping vats there, but not where the pens are now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was already going on, I guess, when you was still at Lyxon, wasn't it? Wasn't that starting up back in the 20s or something like that?
Yeah, the first dipping I got into was when I was working for Lyxon, 1934.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So it was, did Maxie already have his vats built when you started over here?
Yeah, yeah. They went there and rebuilt them and done some work on them before we started, when ticks broke out again.
Yeah. What'd you do with screw worm and that kind of stuff?
Well, we just treated them till they finally got rid of them.
What, did you make up any kind of a...
No, we bought the medicine all together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I worked for the government 2 years in that deal. You know, they put on $1 million program in Florida to learn people how to treat them. And I got in on that.
Yeah.
And I first had Hernando County. Then I had Hernando, Citrus, Polk, Sumter, Pinellas, Pasco. When I went there, a fellow named Mostyoker was assistant supervisor for that area. He got a job at the Indian Reservation, and I got his job right quick. And,
so what did you have to do?
Go around and carry that medicine and give it to the people. Benzol and tar, what had been or had.
Did you have to check the herds, or you just let
No, we go give the people the medicine.
Show them how to use it?
Kept it in the courthouse. That benzol come down 50 gallons drum. You had to pick up bottles and put in. And back then, the bootleggers got all the bottles, you know. Yeah. And the bottles was hard to get. Listen. But I met a lot of people then, and them counties. And
yeah.
And they gave you 50 cents a night to park your vehicle. You couldn't park nothing in the world for 50 cents nowhere.
Uh-uh.
That's all that on your expense account they gave you. And you know, I got my 6 month check before I ever got my first. If you made that report and didn't dot an I, they wouldn't pay you. It wouldn't make you any
expense. Boy.
One time an old boy put a pair of boots on expense account. They sent that back and said they didn't pay for no boots. And, so he made a new expense account rule and said, now the boots are there, find them if you can. But the head office was in San Antonio, Texas,
yeah.
And a fellow named Townsend worked there. And I found out if you could get a hold of him, he'd get you straightened out and get your check to you.
Well, that's good to know who to get in touch with.
Sure was, yes.
How'd that screw worm, did you have to check like a rancher would have to check his cattle pretty often, wouldn't he?
Yeah, a lot of them, they killed a lot of cattle, especially young calves. Sheep and hogs, they were worse than them than anything else. And
yeah.
They were bad things. And that's one thing that really worked when they started getting rid of them.
That was good.
They tell me some boy works in the lab figured that deal out. back somewhere.
About the how they got rid of
them? Yeah. Tell how you fly and turn them out.
Right. Was they worse than the tick fever?
Yeah, well, I don't know. They're both bad enough.
Yeah. Oh, this reminds me of something I forgot. How many calves would you lose in a season, you reckon? I mean, percentage-wise, you reckon?
Well, that varied with conditions or what you had for your cattle to eat and whatever got into them.
Would it be as high as 50% or 20% or?
Well, from the time one's born, they got rid of the animal, they'd be better than 20%, I'm sure, always. But not any much, not worse than that.
Okay.
Had to do with, contend with out there.
Poverty?
Poverty, yes. Starved to death.
Starving the cattle to death?
Yeah, young cattle.
How come? Just grass no good out there like you were saying?
Well, Mr. Maxwell thought they ought to eat all this stuff, you know, and it's not good for them. They won't live on it. And they starve to death. Them yearlings when we wean them in the winter and the fall. Yes.
He wouldn't let you buy supplemental feed or anything?
Well, some, but not enough. Not enough.
Yeah. Let's see. Tell me about buzzard traps.
Well, we trap buzzards and kill them. They're worried. You can kill them, get rid of them.
Well, what was the thing? What was bad about having the buzzards around?
Well, they'll kill a young calf sometimes, and sheep. Well, they'll kill every sheep born in the daytime, and just about you don't have it. They don't live. They get them.
Well, I'll be.
If he's born at night and able to follow his mother next morning, why, then they not get it.
And y'all did have a bunch of sheep, didn't you?
Yeah, he had 3,200 sheep one time.
And sold them where?
Well, sold them to a man. He carried some to New Jersey and I don't know where all. And he hauled them off, sold them somewhere. Kept 145. Yeah. Now I think they built up to about 900 maybe. But there, if you can keep the wildcats and dogs out of them, and cows got into them one time out of two and got them bad.
Cows?
Yeah. Somebody imported some cows to run their dogs with up here, you know, around Lake Weir, and they got across that river. And
yeah.
Now, all during the times of screwworms and wildcats, them sheep kept getting a little more every year, getting a little more. But them cows got into them, they went to backing up.
Yeah.
Population backed up.
Well, describe a buzzard trap to me.
You just make a trap about as high as this, and we made it out of chicken wire or net wire.
Yeah.
And put a funnel in there, and put a dead animal in there. Back then, you could kill an alligator, put alligator anything dead animal, and then they'd go in that funnel, but they wouldn't know it. They'd start trying to get out. You go around and around, you know.
Yeah.
And
so, what would it be about as high as this desk?
Yeah, just. Down there, well, just leave it big enough for the butter to go in then.
Yeah.
Let the funnel go out about that long.
Make it out inside. It would run inside.
Yeah, inside, yeah.
Wow, big.
And you know, I've seen them butters get so hungry in there, you'd go shooting. We'd shoot them with 22 rifle in the head to kill them, you know.
Yeah.
So they'd go picking on each other in there, and you're shooting them too. Yeah, get that blood get that coming out of one's head. Them butters, and you're shooting them in that pen.
Not too smart.
No, sir. Yeah, pretty smart in a way.
Huh. Thing was about as square as that desk? Or
no, make it bigger. One half as big as this room almost. Want it to be square, about as much as half of this room.
That'd be 8 or 10 foot square.
Yeah.
And then about 3 feet high. So how many buzzards would you get in there?
Oh, man, we've got as many as 100 in there. They'd go in there. We had them thinned down around that area pretty good one time.
Yeah.
But now that I think they're protected, I believe they are.
God, boy, I've never seen buzzards like there are down here. Does anybody use buzzard traps anymore?
I don't know of it. I sure don't know. Didn't many people use them back then either.
Really?
First time I ever saw, we went over to Bartow one time, and that old floppy man had somebody took us out, me and that man showed it to us. I seen him right at it meeting, and then we went to trapping them. And, but I tell you, we had a lot of hogs around there back then. They'd get around them butter traps and try to and tear up everything. A hog would tear it up, you know, if you give us trouble, yeah.
Now, how did you make it? Did you have wood frame?
Boards, one of the six boards for framework, and get that, stretch that wire around that and staple it down.
Yeah. So it's pretty simple to make them.
Yeah, it's easy to make, yeah.
Did you have to put rocks or anything to weight them down?
No, we never did. We never did weight them down.
Did you? Was there better places to put them than other places, or just anywhere?
We put them down where they're doing the most harm, or where the most butters were.
Yeah, that makes sense.
One time lightning killed a couple of horses there, and we put butter pin around them.
Right around the horses?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Buzzard traps.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if there's anybody you know of that I could go to that knows how to make one, that still makes them, anybody still uses them, you know?
No, sir, I sure don't, no, sir. But they're no trouble to me, just make four panels. We made panels so we could go in the pickup and haul it, you know, put them up and then have, making some cover out of the same kind of wire with boards that would cover it.
Yeah.
Then that funnel, you got to put some stay wire or something to hold that funnel in shape that you can put in the ground, you know, be strong. And so we just, for a bird to creep through there, they'll go in there.
They'll find a way to
get in. They'll go in there, yes.
So I guess if the funnel's over on this side, and they land down here, they'll
go around the pen trying to get in.
They'll just peck around the pen until they find that, huh?
We never had no trouble getting them in there.
Huh. What'd keep them from, if that funnel was going inside, what would keep them from coming around the outside and then going back out?
They haven't got sense enough. They walk right around the end, though. I never did know them getting out when they got in there.
Golly. That's sweet.
And I read in some cattleman magazine about, I mean, old man Kirkendall built one in Texas, and his son married Mr. Max's daughter. I seen a picture of some he'd made one time in Cattleman magazine years ago. That's where I got the first idea about making a trap.
It was from somebody in Texas, Kirkendall.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be.
Yeah.
Let me ask you about, I've been reading in the paper lately about Charles Von Maxey.
Yeah.
Who is Charles Von Maxey?
I hear Mr. Maxey's brother's boy.
His brother's boy, right. That'd be a nephew.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. He was Guy Maxey's son.
All right. And what is Pat Wilson's wife's name?
Patricia.
Patricia.
Yeah.
And she's, of course, a Maxey.
Yeah.
How many kids did that Maxey have?
Just have the two girls, Patricia and...
Laura Jean.
Laura Jean, yeah.
And Laura Jean, she didn't have much to do with the ranch, and she got out of it.
Well, she married into a ranch family in Texas, but she sold out her part of the ranch. She don't own it anymore. She owns her part of the Grove property, but...
Okay.
Don't
now, did she marry the Kirkendall?
Yeah, she married the Kirkendall.
That's how the Kirkendalls got
in.
That's the question I was curious about. Because, you know, you showed me all those brands and marks of all the family all the way back down. And I knew they was married in there, but I didn't know nothing about
that. That's right, yeah.
And you said Lat Maxey was from South Carolina or something?
Yeah, native South Carolina.
And he's the first Maxey to come down in this country then, reckon?
Well, the whole family come down here around the phosphate mines.
Oh.
Yeah. He learned to operate some kind of old dredge machine or something. He worked on Hudson Bay in New York on some of them tunnels or something there.
Lat Maxey.
Yeah, but his daddy got over here and they put out a little bit of orange grove. When he come back, he got in the orange grove business.
Well, how come he got in the ranching business?
I don't know. I guess wanted a place to hunt, or he'd go out and get away from town. He would never have a telephone out there or nothing.
Yeah.
And didn't let him put no electricity there for years after they put the REA through there. He would let him put no electricity in there.
When did they finally get power out there?
Well, it must have been the middle 60s along there. Way late.
Yeah. Now, would you consider the operation of the Maxey Ranch to be kind of old-fashioned compared to some of the other big ranches around?
I wouldn't now, but I wouldn't his lifetime.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wanted like the old-time one.
He didn't put much money into the development then, like.
No. No, he.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Did he live out there at the ranch?
Huh?
Did he live out there? At
no.
The ranch?
He had a big home, that big old house, yeah. But he didn't live there.
Yeah. So I guess when you were the foreman, you were the boss out there then.
Yeah.
Of course, the crew lived out there, but.
Yeah.
Was there somebody that was the boss when all of them were out there, like somebody that worked under you?
No.
They were all equal then?
Yeah.
What kept them from getting in trouble? Fear of you?
They never did have much trouble with the workers at all. Now they had to get a drunk or something. Yeah.
How did you work? Was it 5 days a week? Not,
No, we used to work all the time, might say day and night for years and years. And then we got, finally got down to 5 days a week.
Yeah.
For eventually, yeah. Now, wait a minute. That's just come in to fix since I left for about 5 days a week.
What did the married men do?
Well, they lived somewhere else and went home on weekends generally, but they didn't hardly ever had any.
Yeah, mostly single men.
Yeah.
Did Mike Wilder work out there when you was there, or was that after you left?
I don't remember that name.
I think he worked the year, it might have been the year that after you left. He worked out there a while and left. He's out.
But there's so many, I might not remember his name. There had been so many work there over a long period of years.
What is a turnover? You know, how many? How long would somebody work? I know that's hard to answer.
Well, it sure is. It's different. Some of them work off and on, be gone a while and come back. And
it's like any other job.
Yeah. Well, that's worse. There's no recreation, nothing out there. It's worse than a lot of jobs. A lot of places you can go for. At night you can go uptown, but out there you couldn't, you know.
Lord, no. You can hardly do it now. Yeah. Did you have anybody come out there that was from somewhere else, maybe like up north, or that they wanted to be a cowboy, you know, like the Marlboro ad and try it and then just...
Well, they didn't last long, yeah.
Did you have a couple like that?
Every now and then, yeah, one, but...
Huh. Did y'all used to give them a hard time or kid them or anything like that? Or?
Never did try to make it too hard on them.
Hard enough already.
Yeah, hard enough already.
Huh.
Yeah.
What kind of man makes the best cowman?
What kind? One raised with livestock, you know. If you wanted to get a good man, you wanted to get somebody from up here, them rough woods around Perry and up in that area. Them boys knew what to do. They were raised in it. They knew what to do.
All right.
You get one raised out of a big town and see these. Watch television stuff while he didn't know what to do.
Yeah. That's interesting. What do you call, when you was growing up, when you was a youngster, you know?
Yes, sir.
What'd you call somebody that worked cows?
Well, they were just cowboys at all.
Cowboys? Or is that a cowman? Was that a common name? Or?
No, they're always a cowboy. Yeah.
I heard the term cow hunter.
Well, they call them cow hunter, but yeah.
That wasn't very common.
Not too common, though.
Just cowboy.
Yeah. All right.
When y'all spent several nights out at these pens, who cooked?
Well, we just always had a cook. She had a cook with us.
All right.
Yeah, a chuck wagon, yeah. Truck. But back in my first day, we had an oxen wagon, a chuck wagon.
Yeah.
That was my young day. And then from that, they got the horse and wagon, and then you finally got the trucks.
Yeah. Did you ever have a woman cowboy?
No, not. We never did hire no women working the cow world. Maybe some come out of sometime, might go a day or something. And Mr. Max's girls, when they were young, used to go out there and ride in the daytime some.
Maybe for fun? Or?
Yeah, just for fun mostly.
Hmm. What about black people? I've never heard tell of a black cowboy.
Well, they have them. Have them, but we never did have any.
Y'all never did?
No.
Huh. And then you, what about the Seminole?
Well, we had one of them one time, too. He was all right. He's a good worker.
Over at Maxie's?
Yeah.
How long did he stay?
He didn't stay very long. He had about 2 or 3 months, maybe.
Hmm.
He got in a little trouble.
What?
Well, he come down there one night with the cook and drunk, they went up to visit a man who was working with us up there at Bee Hole Junction. The man had a stump right in front of his house, and they ran that stump into a truck, a ranch truck.
Ooh, that's not very good.
And that cook said he'd pay for it. So when he said he'd pay for the truck, when he got it fixed, I held it out of his pen, and he got mad about it, so both of them left.
Huh. What kind of equipment did you have, like machinery? I guess you get more and more as time went on, didn't you?
Yeah, well, we had pickup trucks.
Yeah.
Trucks, finally got 2 pickups. Then we had a straight job truck with a stock body on it. Later, but we didn't have that for years.
Yeah.
Used to, when he'd go to move cattle, he'd take these old Grove trucks and build a body up and use them to move the cattle with.
Hmm.
And that time, they put a trailer behind them. They have a trailer, too.
Yeah.
And when I first come, that's the way they moved them.
Yeah. Well, how did you sell the stock?
Huh?
How did you sell the stock?
Well, he mostly drove the steers out and sold them the weight.
Did somebody come to the ranch? Or
they come to, they'd, well, we had that place at Fort Drum where we're fattening and down at Chancy Bay, and Selby got Selby. He'd take the buyer down there, and he'd buy them, and we'd go and load them there when he'd get ready for them.
All right. So the buyers would come right to the pens?
Yeah, right to go out and look at them in the pasture before he ever bought them.
I got you.
Tell him what he'd give, and then we'd pen them and cut out the fat ones, the good ones. And
of course, they paid by the weight.
Yeah. Mr. Maxey always made the deals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet he did.
Yeah.
Huh.
And I never knew him making but one bad deal. He's a good trader.
What was that?
Well, he sold a man a bunch one time that they weren't fat. And that man talked him into selling them, though, but what the man was going to do, he wasn't going to butcher them. He was going to take them, put them in his pasture and finish growing them out.
Yeah.
But we got that stock before we ever moved them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did most of the stock go?
Miami and Tampa. Black's brother used to buy a lot of them, and Lubin Godfrey and Harley have bought most of them.
Did a bunch of the calves go to Texas back then? Or?
No, not then. He never wanted to know how to sell calves. Eh?
He just sold yearlings, I guess.
The calves, grow them out. Sell the cull cows when they got old. Now and then we get pretty heavily stocked. He'd sell some dry cows to somebody for pastures and stock cattle.
But he wasn't in the calf selling business.
No, sir. He wouldn't do that.
How old were the steers that you sold?
Well, Johnny, 4 or 5 years old.
All right.
They got better blood into them, better pasture. To sell them younger, they'd grow out better.
Like
way better.
Problem, you was telling me. They mature faster.
And he never did sell a bunch that would average 1,000 pounds. So he got some Charlet in them for 4 or 5 years. And then they got the weather. It all averaged over 1,000 pounds of shipment wood and several truckloads. And
that'd make a difference.
It sure did, yes.
Huh. What is, how would you class the cattle out there now? Are they commercial cattle? What do you call them?
Well, that's what I call them, commercial cattle.
Is that that's a grade, isn't it? Isn't that commercial, like a grade of cattle?
Yeah, yeah. They got good cows there now. They've kept improving them pastures.
Back when you was out there, how did Maxie cattle stand up against other cattle in other ranches?
Well, he had as good as anybody, most, except unless somebody had a small purebred herd somewhere.
Yeah, but you're not going to have purebred on a cattle ranch.
No, that's right. Yeah.
Huh. How come English breeds don't thrive down here just straight?
Well, it's on account of nothing, don't have nothing left to eat.
They don't have the grass.
No, don't have the good grass. And You take that grass out in the western states, it's strong. This grass here is ain't no better than what the land is under it.
Well put. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Now that Brahmin, they can live on a little more scruffy.
Yeah, they stand more hardships.
Yeah.
They walk further. They walk a lot, you know. They go further.
They're tall, aren't they?
Yeah.
So the Charolais helps put the weight on them, and the Brahmin in there puts a little weight on them too, I guess.
Yeah, put a little weight, yeah. And the Brahmin cross with the Hereford, the Breeford is a good breed too. They're good cattle.
Yeah.
This Adams bunch of Fort Pierce specialized in them, and they made a success out of it.
What's the Simmental? What's that?
That's the new one coming in since I left there. All I know, I've seen some of them around. I don't know.
They're kind of red.
Yeah, they're red. They got a small head, kind of, neck head. But I don't know anything about them, I'll tell you.
Well, let me back there. When y'all would round up these steers and stuff in the pens, did y'all dehorn them, or did you just not mess with them?
We dehorn them when they were calves. Yeah.
And they once you dehorn them once, will it grow back?
Well, if you don't do a good job, they will.
Where do you got it? You got to cut them down pretty far then.
Yeah, you got to do a good job to start with.
Okay. So if you do a good job, they won't come back.
And if they come back, they'll grow around, grow in the eye, and give all kinds of trouble.
I've seen some. We saw some today that were just growing right straight down there.
Yeah, that's right. And if you... generally, though, when we drench them something for worm or something, if they didn't do a good job the first time, we'd take some clippers and clip them off a second time, and then you get rid of all that, your eye trouble and all, getting in the eyes.
Yeah.
It makes them handle a lot better, have them horns off.
Why?
Well, they hook each other.
They don't know they got the horns on and off, do they?
Yeah, but they know when you job one of the sharp horns in you, that's what I'm talking about.
No.
When they had them sharp horns, they'd hook each other. Cows would.
They'd still try to, but they didn't have any horns.
And you know, way back in the open range days, that you'd get a white animal and a bunch of them with horns, they'd hook that cow and they'd kill her. That's just instinct. They see that white cow so far, you know, they'd give them away. They didn't want you to see them. Trying to hide from you.
White cow.
Yeah, you pin them up and they just hook that white cow.
Yeah.
If you had a white one or a real.
Yeah.
They're bad about that.
If you talk about polled Herefords, what does that mean?
Well, it's a Hereford with no horns.
They're bred for no horns, is that right?
Huh?
Are they bred for no horns?
Yeah, that's a breed. It's a breed. They don't have horns.
Yeah, okay. So pole doesn't mean, if you cut the horns off, that doesn't mean
pole. No, I don't mean a pole. Pole born butt head.
All right. Born butt head.
Yeah.
All right.
And the red poles and black poles and pole Herefords.
Yeah. What does muley ear mean?
Hmm?
Muley. What was that term? I was at a little rodeo last weekend, and they had a plastic steer head that they'd mount on a board to practice roping. And he said, now, that sometimes there's a thing similar to that that you can strap onto a dehorned or he said a muley. I thought he said muley.
Muley is supposed to be called a butt head. Muley.
Yeah.
That's
butt head.
Yeah, muley, butt head. I don't know what.
What do you call that machine that you herd the steer or the calf into? You put a calf into, that squeezes it and you can turn it on its side. What do you call that thing?
Well, it's a calf chute. What we always call it, a calf chute.
Calf chute?
Yeah.
Now, they make a bigger one. I was looking at one today. It's a great big one.
Yeah, they make them for all size animals. Yeah, they make them.
There's something.
They got them that work hydraulically, too. Well, hydraulic, yeah. But then we had
to work. Whatever, and boy, just dream.
Then we had to work manually. They want hydraulic.
Yeah, hydraulic in the arm.
Yeah.
What are some? Let's see. I'm trying to think of some of the names of things that y'all used that are kind of unusual that most people wouldn't know the name. If you were to say a such and such, they wouldn't know what you was talking about. I'm trying to think of some.
Well, I don't
know. Like,
I don't know.
Well, let's see. Now, if you got a saddle, you got the horn. I guess everybody calls that a horn.
Yeah. Then the channel, that's the back.
That's the back.
Yeah.
What do you, now, some you got the horn coming down. It's like got no shoulders, and some of them got steep shoulders.
Yeah. Well, them shoulders put your knees out, keep them falling off.
What do you call those shoulders? That got a name?
Yeah, they got a shoulder. Yeah.
The shoulders,
yeah,
what they call them?
Yeah.
So you like the one that's fairly wide out then?
Yeah, I don't want nothing, a big old bump out there, though, just...
You didn't want it to stick way out, but something you could hook your leg on if you needed to.
I'll tell you something else about a saddle.
All right.
These McClellan 3 saddles, you can take one of them and a switch and ride a horse a heap longer than you can with a big saddle and a pair of spurs.
Yes. All right.
My uncle learned me that way back. He was born into it, too.
Yeah. Well, I've ridden a McClellan. They're awful comfortable. I mean, it didn't have the split. It had it'd been fixed.
Mm.
My brother's got old workhorses, you know, 1,600 pounds. We got this little old saddle. I look like a postage stamp, but it rides good in the mountains because it's only about 11-inch seat, you know, and it's comfortable might not be the right word.
Yeah.
But what kind of saddle did you usually ride?
I rode all kinds. I rode them old Cullen trees for years. And
Cullen trees?
McClellan, yeah.
Yeah, McClellan. With no horn on it at all?
No horn at all.
You didn't, if you never roped, you didn't need a horn, did you?
No.
Huh. How come you switched over to a Western style saddle?
Well, they're more comfortable and them McClellan trees got hard to get.
Yeah. Well, what do you mean you could ride more?
Well, it's lighter on your horse and you don't all the time abusing him with a switch and them spurs, you know, you spur him in the ribs and a horse just lasts longer.
So you didn't use spurs?
Yeah, I used spurs and big saddle too, but
I guess if you need both hands, you haven't got
it. Now and then you get a horse you don't need no spurs on, but very seldom. Yeah.
Did you break horses? Where'd you get your horse stock?
Well, we used to buy them and went to raise them, but Selby, where they raised them, they broke them there. The man had some boys.
Yeah. Was they broke pretty good when you got them?
Yeah, they were broke, yeah. Yeah, one time his family lived there on the old grove, raised them. He had some kids, and when we got them, they were broke.
Well, they broke to cut?
Yeah, no, they just broke to ride, get tame, and they wouldn't buck or nothing.
But so y'all could make them where they'd cut out?
That's just, every horse won't be a cutting horse. Maybe one out of 20 is any good. It's just not born in them.
So no matter, you got to have the right horse and train.
But
y'all had used cutting horses, I gather.
We had some we could use, generally.
Yeah.
We always had a lot more sorry horses than we had good ones.
Probably right.
Yeah. That'll be everywhere, too.
I bet you. Tell me about rodeos.
Well, they're all the same thing right over and over.
You didn't like them. You don't have much truck with them.
Well, I didn't. I don't. I'd like to go see them, but I don't especially care anything about it. I never take no part in them.
Yeah. Would you let any of your people that's working for you do it?
Yeah, if they wanted to go, that was it. They could go with.
What would happen if they broke an arm or a leg or something?
Well, that was up to them. If they got broke up on the job, we took care of them. But I don't know of any of them ever getting hurt off anywhere.
Did any of the boys you had work rodeos?
Yeah, we've had some working, yeah.
I'm curious. Yeah. Let's see. Well, I can't think of anything else, Bose.
Well,
we've been talking almost an hour here.
I don't got anything to do. I'm loafing.
Shoot. I don't know anybody. I've not talked to anybody that knows as much about, what you do?
Well, I've done it all my life and born in it. Sometimes if you got the time, we'll go down anywhere from Fort Pierce to Fort Myers when you hear that big Cypress country where I know the country. And
God, I'll bet that. That whole list of pins, you know, that you have in those tablets? I'd like to come down with a road map, just a county road map, you know, and just have you put a little X where they were and name them. Maybe I could mail it to you.
Lots of them now in people's pasture, you can't get in, you know, to them. Most of them now was in the open range days when these old pens, most of these guys had on them lists of the old time. Nothing there now, maybe an old post or something where they were.
But
then people's pastures. And,
if you just look at a road map, you think you'd be able to figure out by looking at a map fairly close where they were?
Yeah.
They had a good accurate county road map.
Isn't that where you talk about her name was Fair Charles, where y'all went the other day?
No, her name was Sarah Childs.
Child. That was out east of Venus, wasn't it?
Well, pretty far east. It's east of Sebring.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Child?
Yeah, you know where Route 27 and Route 70 cross?
Yeah.
If you turn right, you go to Arcadia.
Yeah.
You turn left, go 6 miles, and then turn south 4 or 5 miles, you get down to her place.
Well, right into I got a set of pen called Grasshopper.
Grasshopper.
That was a pet. That's been there since I can remember. Way back, Bob Whitten had pens there, then part